It's The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds, and for Bill Radke. Last week, Seattle opened its 8th tiny house community in Whittier Heights. The village will be the first to exclusively serve women. The aim of these villages is to shelter people who are homeless and to provide security and stability. But not everyone sees the 100-square-foot buildings as the best solution for Seattle's homelessness. The city is currently being sued over a tiny house village planned for the South Lake Union neighborhood, and the Seattle Times investigation out today found that at the Wallingford site there was no cache management for more than 3 months. Also, it took weeks for the camp to get electricity and a hygiene truck. Well, the city of Seattle calls these issues growing pains. But Record host Bill Radke recently sat down with someone who disagrees, co-chair of the grassroots organization Speak Out Seattle, Elizabeth James. He was also joined by the executive director of the Low Income Housing Institute, Sharon Lee. Her group owns and operates Seattle's tiny house villages. They spoke before the Seattle Times investigation was released, and Bill began the conversation by having Lee describe the idea behind the villages.
So many people are trying to survive, like literally survive, in a cardboard box or in a cold, wet tent on the street. And it's not, you know, these tents are not made for year-round use. There's wind, there's rain. It's untenable to be sleeping in a tent or to feel safe. So the tiny house is a short-term crisis response, and we're clear about that. This is not a long-term solution. Until we build more affordable housing, we need safe places for people. And the tiny houses have evolved so that they are now, all of them are insulated. They have heat, electricity. They have an outlet so people can charge their phone. And they have access to toilets, showers, laundry, a fully equipped staff kitchen, community space, often Wi-Fi. So there's a whole community around the tiny house that supports the people so that they feel safe.
Elizabeth, everything has pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the cons, do you agree that there are positives about people having a locked door and heating and sanitation and that solid home?
It's better than tents. Yes, I do agree that it's better than tents. I thought tents were just a horrible idea. I think that we should aim higher, though. I don't think that this is a great temporary solution even.
Why is that?
Because it's a waste of resources, and the sense that we're not putting that urgency and all that time that these meetings take place in order to renew permits or get permits or talk to neighborhoods, all of that should be, that laser focus should be on working with businesses, residents, you know, nonprofits, churches, and the government, pulling everybody together and having real solutions that are permanent that involve mixed-use housing, not clumping one group of people together in substandard third-world conditions and saying, this is okay for now for you.
Why not tiny house villages for now until we have the permanent solutions? You talked about resources. Why not both?
Well, I think one of the things is that the tiny house villages have had issues in the neighborhoods that where they're located. The Licton Springs one, we didn't oppose it, but we did have suggestions for how it could be improved.
That's the tiny house village between like Greenwood and Maple Leaf. It's a low barrier shelter, so that in Licton Springs, people can use alcohol or drugs.
And we did have suggestions that it could be improved, because if you put a whole group of people, at that point they were talking 70 people, you know, that have various issues, whether it's behavioral health, mental health, the criminal history, or drug use, or an alcoholist, and then you put that into right across the street from a neighborhood and a school, you know, a few hundred feet away, you could anticipate that there might be some issues.
Well, let's talk about that. We have, Sharon, we have some tape here from the meeting to re-permit. Someone who lives in the area, Jim Sullivan, prefaced his statements by saying he has empathy for the situation. This is helping people, but he has seen an increase in crime.
Our crime rate has increased tenfold. Car prowls, assaults, drug activity, needles, not only car prowls, but going into people's garages, going into people's homes, going into their yards. And one, which I can't substantiate, but it was reported, even assaulted with a gun as she was getting off the bus, walking to her home.
Sharon, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think Licton Springs is in a neighborhood already, if you look at Aurora Avenue, and that neighborhood has had a prevalence of crime and incidents that's much higher than other neighborhoods, regardless of whether Licton Springs Tiny House Village is there or not. So the majority of the tiny house villages are clean and sober and do not allow alcohol and drug use on site. And so those are very, very different. This was a, I have to say, this was a sort of a trial to see if this could work. And so we are at Licton Springs working on a plan that would include more security lighting, cameras, staffing issues. And, you know, and we're working closely with the community. We have a community advisory committee. I will say this, is that we have looked at other tiny house villages, like the one at Othello Village, and crime has decreased 29% to 30% in that village. And the neighbors are very supportive, and the neighbors are very
Since the village first opened? Or
yes.
What, crime?
Yeah, yes, okay. Absolutely. We have police data that shows that. The information around Licton Springs, the police data is not like fine-tuned yet, so we don't really know how much is related to the village and how much is related to what's happening around the neighborhood, regardless of the village. I will say in terms of data, we actually have information that the city and Low-Income Housing Institute, our case managers, have collected that shows clearly that if you're in a tiny house, it is a very effective strategy to move you into long-term housing. So we have moved over 300 people into permanent long-term housing, and we have reunited 80 people with their families or friends so that they're no longer on the streets. And then we've had over 200 people, because they live in a tiny house, you know, they can lock the door, they can change, they have a shower, they can go to work. So we have over 200 people have employment by virtue of the fact that they're living in a tiny house.
Regarding successful outcomes, my understanding is to continue receiving funding. King County has a minimum standard, an exit rate of 40%. These are King County numbers that from April 1st of 2017 through March 31st, 2018. Ballard Tiny Home Village, 13% exits to permanent housing, 20% return to homelessness. Georgetown, 20% exits to permanent housing, 17% return to homelessness. And are we diverting resources to allow people to live in these small places and not channeling money into what we would call low-income housing?
Well, I think everyone should be aware of the fact that in order to build one low-income housing unit, one apartment costs $300,000. To set up a tiny house village costs $300,000. So you could house one person in one apartment, and it takes 4 years to build that building. I'm not saying that's not important. We do that all the time. We want more permanent and affordable housing, but it can't be built quickly enough. Whereas a tiny house village, we can house 60 people, set it up, and have staff there, and then quickly move people into housing. Now, the area, the average area rent for Seattle for a two-bedroom is now $2,800. And so it is very, very difficult for people who are exiting homelessness to get into market rate housing. So I challenge Elizabeth and others, you know, to advocate for more affordable housing.
Elizabeth, what about the idea that tiny house villages are economic or bang for the buck?
You know, if the rate of moving out and into productive lives in independence was moving faster, I think that it would be more of a solution. But we've had encampments in Seattle since the 1990s, and we're just getting more homeless. We're getting more people that choose to live out on the street. And there are many people, when they go to the council meetings, who have been homeless for 10 or more years now. We need to come up with a better, quit calling this a temporary solution if we've been doing it since 1990, and start looking at how we should really address this and what are the causes that lead someone into homelessness. It's not just a loss of a job.
The proposed tiny house village in South Lake Union would not be a low barrier my understanding. Is that right? It would not be a low barrier village?
The way that Tiffany Washington of the Human Services Department stated that it would be is that you couldn't use any drugs or alcohol in the common areas of the encampment, but you could go ahead and do any drugs or alcohol inside your unit.
Well, I can do drugs and alcohol in my right. home. So what's the important difference?
I think
there?
The difference is that you're moving in a community, a brand new group of people to this neighborhood. A lot of times when they do this, the navigation team takes people from all over the city and brings them into one little concentrated area. And even if they're behaving well, it does tend to attract other encampments springing up around but the nearby, and there is an increase in crime reported by neighbors. One of the things I know in North Seattle and Ballard was that we just couldn't get a police officer to respond.
Well, then is the issue then not with tiny house villages, but with more enforcement of
That would be a safe thing, and that's one of the recommendations that our group had made about the tiny villages, that you could anticipate when you have people that are using illegal substances that they're going to have to get the drugs from somewhere, and that maybe some drug dealers would come to the property.
Would you acknowledge, Sharon, that tiny house villages have to go someplace? So what do you do with the problem of the concerns of the neighbors around a tiny house village site?
Well, I think we are seeing a lot of support from neighbors. So when we build the tiny houses or paint the tiny houses or collect donations, we have overwhelming support from direct neighbors, church groups, businesses. So the residents around Othello Village are very supportive and would like it to stay. The village around Inner Bay, they wanted the village to stay, and they're continuing to provide support and bring food and bring donations to the Inner Bay site.
Is that something we agree on, Elizabeth, that some neighborhoods find success?
I agree that some neighbors in neighborhoods support the tiny house concept. I live in Ballard, so when they proposed the small encampment that in my neighborhood, which was not very far from me, I did not oppose it. I was a wait and see. I didn't have a problem until all of a sudden there was encampments within half a mile of it all over the place.
What kind of encampments?
You mean, unauthorized ones.
So are you saying one caused the other, that the tiny house village
We know attracted? That some of the people at the Locks Hillside lost six trees, full-size trees, went sliding down the hillside from an encampment up there. I talked to people up there several times who admitted that they came and were kicked out for behavior or whatever, and they just moved, six blocks away and set up in another area. I believe the Tiny House Village and the City of Seattle both have, the responsibility to make sure that impacts on the neighborhood, that they look beyond the block around them and say, if we're having people exit, let's make sure we work with the navigation team and that these people aren't just leaving and taking out their anger about being kicked out on the neighborhood.
Would that make tiny house villages okay with you if the follow-up were
there? I still go back to, I think that they're ultimately a waste of time. I wouldn't say close them right now. I would say quit adding more and let's really get down to how can we do this together as a city where everybody feels good about it and that it, the Business Journal says we're spending $1 billion a year on homelessness in Seattle, King County. We would like to see something for that $1 billion.
Let's talk about whether tiny house villages are an appropriate place for people to live. A consultant to the City of Seattle on homelessness, here she is, Barbara Poppy, talking with King 5 in 2017, calling tiny house villages shanty towns.
What is the difference between those and refugee camps? Well, in many circumstances, the refugee camps are a higher standard. I just find it very unsettling. And I look at those spaces and I think, what would it take for your community to rapidly deploy the resources and actually construct some apartments there?
What do you think, Sharon, of her comparison to refugee camps?
I think it's insulting and it's not true, because if you're in a refugee camp, you are more or less a prisoner and you're living in abject poverty and you can be starving to death. This is not the case at all in a tiny house village. So it's like ridiculous.
I disagree with that. I think that Barb Hoppe and the USICH, which is the United U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, they actually recommend against doing encampments, even ones that are these tiny sheds that are having. And the reason why is because they've statistically done this across the United States, and they say they do not have good outcomes for actually leading people out of homelessness. You know, the USICH came out with a report in May that said that these are difficult to manage and maintain, and that they are targets for illegal activity, that they tend to not be temporary, which is shown here. We started out in 2015, adding just a few in the city, and now we're up to 8. And I've heard at meetings that the goal is to have 12 by the end of the year. They are also moving to remove the time limit restriction from 2 years maximum. And I just believe that, you know, like the Poppy Report and like the USICH, these funds could be targeted more strategically to build permanent housing.
We are showing a much higher rate of success than shelters, but you're not attacking shelters, or enhanced shelters, and you're not attacking enhanced shelters. So I'm just saying that the reason why there's a city evaluation that said that tiny house villages are more effective than other forms of shelter, and you should read that document.
Sharon, tiny house villages, is it becoming the standard that we're setting as a city? Are you troubled that the city is saying, in effect, this is the best we can do with a more stable village than a homeless encampment, but this is the answer? Does that concern you?
Well, we think permanent low-income affordable housing is the way to go, but we can't wait for it to happen. We can't wait for, you know, 5 or 10,000 units to get built overnight. It's not going to happen. So in the meantime, we think it is the solution. We have a lot of people who have been spending years living in the park or living on the streets. And so if we can get them out of their tent into a tiny house village and into permanent housing, that's the way to go.
Sharon Lee, Executive Director of the Low Income Housing Institute, with Elizabeth James, Co-Chair of Speak Out Seattle. They were talking to Bill Radke about tiny house villages in Seattle. You're listening to The Record on KUOW, Sound Stories, Sound Voices.